This is the Stamfords podcast at the Stamfords Travel Writers Festival at Destinations in Olympia.
And one for all, it's day three of the Stamfords Travel Writers Festival. And three, as we know, is the magic number. And we're delighted here to have our very own three musketeers joining us on stage with their traveller's wisdom. Please welcome, in conversation with Julia Wheeler, Andrew Fraser, Lloyd Figgins and Phoebe Smith.
Good afternoon, everybody. We are going to be so much wiser in 45 minutes' time. It's going to be fantastic. We have got flights, we've got nights, and we have got how not to take fright, basically, on the stage here. So, Andrew Fraser at the far end, his book is Tripping the Flight Fantastic, Adventures in Search of the World's Cheapest Airfare. Phoebe Smith is the award-winning editor of Wanderlust Travel Magazine, and she's written seven books. Her latest is Wild Nights, Camping Britain's Extremes. And Lloyd Figgins was a police officer, a soldier, and an expedition leader before he founded LFL Global Risk Mitigation. And his book is called Looking for Lemons. We'll explain why in a second. A travel survival guide. So let me begin, Andrew, with you. Yeah. Tell us about the idea behind your book, the premise, if you like, behind your book.
Well, it changed. Could you hear me okay, yeah? It changed. When I initially wrote the book, I found a method to fly around Europe for ridiculously cheap costs. So I was finding flights for £5, £6, £7, and I managed to set up an itinerary where I flew to 10 European cities in a month for £142. So that was the initial premise of my book, and when I actually made the journey, what I've discovered was that I already knew this, but it really came true to me that travel really does broaden the mind. And for me, it became a mission to encourage people to travel more. I think we need more travel in this world, between different countries, between different nations, so that we understand each other better, I think. And certainly I found when I was traveling, it was 10 European cities that I went to, that I felt, for the first time in my life, I was raised a Geordie, and then I realised I was English and Catholic and all these different things, British. But for the first time, I felt truly European, and that meant a lot to me. And it was only afterwards that I realised how prescient that was, because I feel that in the world right now, people are putting up borders everywhere and building walls. I will try not to be too political, but it's hard for me not to. And I really think that what we should be doing is tearing down walls. And in a way,
so let me ask you then, if people are thinking about getting out there, what's the secret to doing that cheaply on the flights? Because there are some very specific things within your book, which I'm sure people would love to hear about.
I'll tell you a little bit now. And I'll be on the Brad stand later. So if there's anybody who wants to find a cheap flight, come and find me and I can show you how to do that. But there are a couple of websites. There are a lot of travel websites selling the same thing, and I ignore them. There's two I would recommend to you. One is skyscanner.com.
Has everybody got a pen? Skyscanner.com.
Yep.
Skyscanner.com, and the other one is kiwi.com.
Kiwi.com.
Yeah, and if you want to find a cheap flight, I had a eureka moment. Put it this way, I had a eureka moment.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I had a eureka moment. I was sitting in the pub, as usual, and I was like, what do you do if you just want to go anywhere? Literally anywhere. And on these websites, you can just put in, next Tuesday, I want to go anywhere from my local airport. Where can I go? And the answer came back to me, and it was incredible. It was like finding a gold mine, the number of flights to places that I never dreamed of going. And personally, I don't think it matters where you go. I just think you can have an adventure anywhere, as long as you go with an open mind and an open heart. So first of all, I found out how to fly out for very cheap. But what I also found was that a lot of the airlines, like Ryanair and EasyJet, they'll sell you a cheap flight outward bound, but the return flight is expensive. So what you can do is fly, don't fly in a straight line. Don't fly return. Never fly return. Fly in a triangle or a zigzag or a circle. And you can save a lot of money. As an example, my friend was looking to go back to her home in Oslo, and she was paying about £140 return for flights from Gatwick. I found her flights going via Warsaw. So if you fly to Warsaw and spend a few days in Warsaw, I brought the price down to, I don't know, I think it came to about £32. So she got the flight to Warsaw, I think it was £8. The flight to Oslo in Norway was, I think, £4. And then the flight back home was about £12. Or maybe that doesn't add up. But you can do it that way. And the money you save on that return flight, if you have the time and the flexibility of mind, not just of time, you can actually have a much richer experience. And she did that. And they got a lovely apartment in Warsaw because it's a very cheap city. They got a beautiful apartment there, and they had an adventure. And that's all. Life's all about adventures, right?
Let's come to Phoebe next, because life is all about adventures, isn't it? Tell us about your latest book and the challenges that you set yourself within that.
Well,
pass the mic.
Do I need this one?
Well, thank you all for coming. I just wanted to say, and a big shout out to the people standing at the back. Respect to you. So my day job is to tell you that adventure lurks overseas, which it does, and you should definitely go and travel. Like you said, it certainly breaks down borders. But you can also have amazing adventures right here in the UK. And it took me traveling all the way to Australia to find that out. When I realised just what we have on our own shores and how amazing it can be, just by the simple act of taking with you a tent and some camping gear and going to go sleep on your own in one of our amazing wildernesses that we have in all corners of the UK, I was determined to share that with as many people as possible, which is why I started writing my books. You'll have to excuse me, I'm not normally this husky sounding. I do have a cold, I should just say. But so I started out by writing a book called Extreme Sleeps, where I told people about my journey from being a normal woman who liked to sleep in a normal bed with a mattress and a duvet into now this wild camping addict who just can't get enough of sleeping in the strangest places she can find and having some pretty miserable weather. And I wrote Wilderness Weekends, which you can see here, the Brat Guidebook. And I sort of call this my lazy adventurer's handbook, because there's 26 ready-made wilderness weekends in the UK, because so many of us think, oh, that does sound good. I'd quite like to have a go and push myself. But where do I go? And so that's got advice about where to go. And then Wild Nights came about, which is the more recent one, because when I wrote Extreme Sleeps, I actually got a fair bit of criticism from a certain type of person, and I won't go into who that was, but they had an issue with me doing this thing that they like to portray as being quite hardcore and quite, I'm brave because I go and do this, but I don't think that's the case. For me, it's always about, my motto is enjoy, not endure. I'm not doing this to try and prove that I'm a Bear Grylls type of adventurer. I'm doing it because I genuinely love to do it, and I want to share that love and get people to have a go doing it. So Wild Nights came about almost as an answer to them, to say, well, okay, if you want me to prove myself and do something of a challenge, I'm not a climber, I'm not an athlete, I've never rode an ocean or walked across a continent, but my goodness, I know how to sleep. So I'm going to set myself a series of sleeping challenges. And so I did a bit of research, and I wanted to take myself to some places I'd not been to before. So the first one I did, I tried to find the Est location, so the remotest Bothy, and the remotest point in Britain. I found the official middle of nowhere, and the grid reference for that can be found in the book, and I spent a night there. And after I did that, I had a little bit of I crossed a river and I got stuck in it, and I nearly didn't pull myself out. But when I did, I'll spoil the ending, I did get out of that river. I just wanted to do more and push myself a little bit more. And so I slept on the Three Peaks. So that's the highest mountain in England, Wales and Scotland. And I did that over a period of several months. Most people do the Three Peaks Challenge, which is climbing all those mountains in 24 hours. big mistake. You don't enjoy any of it. You don't remember any of it. You're normally sick. You're doing one in the dark. So I wanted to spend the night on each one. And then the final thing I did after that was something I called my Extreme Sleeps Challenge, which was sleeping for a night at the northernmost, southernmost, easternmost, westernmost points of mainland Britain, the highest, the lowest point, and the centermost point. And I did that by myself on consecutive nights. And the only time I could fit that in with my full-time job was at the end of November, beginning of December. So you can only imagine, for instance, what the weather was like on top of Ben Nevis, the highest point of mainland Britain. But doing it, for me, took me to some places I would have been quite snobby about. I'm just actually finishing off a book called Britain's Best Small Hills, which is out in October, to try and prove that actually I've been a bit of a height snob, and some of the best places can be found are really, really not actually that high or that extreme. So I'm sort of going the opposite way now. But the one thing I just did want to say that did happen on that sleeping journey was that on top of Ben Nevis, I found so much rubbish that people had left behind during the three peak season. And I was so angry that I picked it all up and I took a picture of it and I tweeted it and I carried it down. And I said, if I can carry all this rubbish down, why can't people just take out what they bring in? And that tweet went mental. Like, it got so many favorites and retweets. I got people emailing me like days after saying they'd gone to their local beauty spot and cleaned it up because they'd been inspired. And to me, that just proved that to me was the real achievement of that challenge. It wasn't being the first person to sleep at all those points. It was inspiring people to do something to make a wild place better. And so adventures are great because sometimes the results are completely unexpected.
Okay. Sometimes they're unexpected in a good way. Sometimes they're unexpected in not such a good way. So Lloyd's book is called Looking for Lemons, and the title is shorthand for quite a lot. Just explain the title to us.
Yeah, so the title actually came from some Canadian backcountry folklore, and it's a story they tell there in teaching people how to effectively mitigate risk. So the way to look at this is to think of life as a one-armed bandit slot machine. And if you get a lemon coming up, it's a hazard. And unless you do something to mitigate that hazard, things are only actually going to get worse. So one lemon, you can usually do something about it. But if there's two lemons, three lemons, or you get four in a row, things are looking really bad. So the whole idea behind the book is to identify those hazards that come along when we're traveling, do something about them at the time they occur, in order that you can have a happy and hopefully memorable travel experience.
And a big part of that comes through in your book is preparation.
Yeah, I mean, I run a risk mitigation company, so we teach people how to stay safe when they're traveling overseas. And the sorts of areas that we operate in are the sorts of places you definitely don't want to go on holiday. So we're talking places like Mali, Syria, the DRC, Swindon. all those
is there
sorts...
anybody from Swindon? Oh, sorry.
It's all right. The reason I use Swindon is if you read the book, the introduction, I'm going to gain it back. The introduction talks about my life, my early life, and my brother was a really curious child. He was older than me. And when I came along, I think he saw an opportunity that he's got something here that would actually really help his curiosity in particularly risky situations. So my brother, Mike, who now lives in Swindon, he used to dare me to do different things because he was curious about the outcome. And one of those things, as alluded to in the introduction, was finding myself at the age of two on the wrong side of a crocodile enclosure in a zoo back in the late 60s. And as you can imagine, zoos in the late 60s in the Far East didn't have the same rigor applied to their health and safety as they do nowadays. So there we went to this day out to the zoo. And crocodiles were in their enclosure, and the local people used to throw coins at the crocodiles in order to get them to move so they could see these magnificent creatures move. And my brother looked at me and he said, you know, those piles of coins, they could make us rich. He said, I'd go in there myself, but I'm too big to squeeze through those railings. But you could easily get through there. And Mum and Dad would be really proud. So off I went, toddled with purpose towards this pile of coins. Big gasp from the crowd. My parents looked at one another in unison and said, where's Lloyd? Their question was answered as they saw their young son toddling towards these reptiles, very large ones. And my brother denied all responsibility for this. Fortunately for me, a local man jumped the fence and got in and came and got me out. The family day was abandoned. My parents, highly embarrassed. And then we started heading home, but not before my brother dared me to poke a monkey in a cage, which I did, and it bit my finger. So that was my introduction.
It was a great day out all round, really.
Yeah, that was my introduction to risk mitigation, basically. And then since then, I've travelled to over 80 countries, as I said, some of the more dangerous parts of the world, and had all sorts of different experiences. So the idea, the premise of the book was not just to write a travel safety guide, but actually to include some of my adventures within that guide and some of the things that you can do to make your travel a lot more safer and therefore a lot more enjoyable. And as Sir Ranulph Fiennes very kindly wrote the foreword for the book, and in there he says, Lloyd has been honest and transparent where he's made mistakes. And I think that that's key, that I, through no pity to myself at all, have done a lot of that risk mitigation for you. I've made those mistakes in order that you don't necessarily have to, and hopefully by reading the book you'll be able to learn from some of the things that I went through.
Let me pass this microphone over, Phoebe. I want to ask you, Phoebe, how good are you at preparing? It's going to come on.
Hang on. Double.
When I first started, not at all. I did what everyone does. I just thought, oh, I'll just throw this in a bag and go have a go. But then, obviously, I've been doing it sort of for over 10 years now, so I actually always have what I call a go bag, ready packed for a wild night out, either in the boot of my car or by my front door. So when the weather looks good or I have an evening off, I can just go and there's no excuses. We were actually talking before, me and Lloyd, and I'm quite laid back about risk, I think, is part of my thing, because I am going out to enjoy myself. So I did learn how to map read so that I can navigate, because I do think, you know, the maps that we have in the UK are some of the best in the world, and I'm a complete map geek. Like, wherever I go, I buy a map. First thing I ask
particularly
is, do you have a map?
Particularly at Stamford's, I'm sure.
Yeah. And so I wanted to take control of things myself, and this is the thing, so I like to do a lot of things by myself, and that's not because I'm antisocial. I like to do things with other people too, but there's something very special about going to a wild place or going to any place on your own and being responsible for yourself. And I take pride. I hate the way nowadays when someone hurts themselves, there seems to be this kind of blame thing where people want to, oh, why did that happen? It's someone else's fault. I like taking responsibility for myself. And so I learned how to map read so that when the weather comes in, you know, I can get myself out of that situation. I don't want to have someone else tell me how to do it. And it's nice to walk with someone else and let them do it sometimes. But I think if you can pick up a map and start to learn to love maps, you know, when I was, there used to be a running joke in my family when I was a kid, because we'd come out the supermarket and I would always be the one who didn't remember where the car was parked. I'd always walk the wrong way. And as I was growing up, I was always, people would make jokes about this. But actually, that can really turn you off and think, oh, maybe I'm not good at direction. But then when you get a map and you start to understand it and you can orientate it and learn to love it, it really does open the world up for you. And being able to explore by yourself, a lot of it is like 90% confidence. It's having that wherewithal to get up and go and explore, which every single one of you here has. I know you do.
So, Andrew, let's come back to you then. In terms of that confidence, you go to, I think, 10 cities on this route, which is not there and back. Things don't always go well. I mean, for example, you lose your phone, or your phone doesn't work at one stage. I'm taking it that you haven't got maps for these things and you're actually relying on the GPS on your phone.
I'm actually a really bad traveller. I had to become disorganised organised to make this trip. But I would just agree with these guys here, agree with them both, danger can be anywhere. It can be in Swindon. I just came back from Georgia, where I met real-life Nazis. And as you were saying, I think, Phoebe, weirdly, I didn't find myself scared. And you were saying, one thing I learned from that experience is to grow from it. And it should have been terrifying, but it wasn't. was never show fear in those situations. I think there's a little bit of me now that I've grown from my travel experiences that I'm kind of drawn to it a little bit. I think maybe I am. I'm a bit naughty like that. But don't everybody get into it. But it, you know, I sort of enjoyed it in a strange way.
Well, it's interesting you should say that because Colin Thubron, the great travel writer, was here yesterday and he was saying that the things that he's written about are the things that he felt threatened by. So he went to Russia and China and they've been the things that have worried his generation. So I guess face the fear and do it anyway would be one piece of advice. Go on, what are you going to say in terms of mitigating that?
Well, I think that fear is something that you should embrace. Because too many people tend to bury their heads in the sand. And therefore, if you're doing that, you're not actually in a good position to mitigate the things that are making you afraid. So if you have a look at fear and embrace it, it gives you an opportunity to decide what is it that's making you scared, what can you do about it, and then put in a plan in action in order to mitigate that. But I think fear is actually a really good thing. Fear is one of our most primal instincts that we have as human beings. And ignore it at your peril because, you know, if you think about gut instinct, some of the situations that I found myself in, had it not been for me listening to fear and listening to my gut instinct, I think things perhaps would have turned out differently and not as good.
Some things, though, let's sort of go back to the beginning of a journey. There's a chapter in your book about aviation. So given that that's going to be the starting point from here for... excuse me, Phoebe, but for lots of things. What are your sort of top tips, if you like, even at that early stage when you're looking at where to go and how to get there?
Well, you know, there's so many things that we can do, and Andrew has touched on his book about, you know, different places where you can look for flights, but it's also about selecting the airline that you're actually going to go on. So there's some really good advice out there. And in the book, I allude to a website, which is the Aviation Safety Network. So if you just Google the Aviation Safety Network, what it does is it gives you a breakdown of every single airline, including the really small ones that you might find in the more remote regions of the world. And it actually details all their safety records. So it will even detail the last time that they had an accident, how many fatalities there were in that accident, how many people were injured. And so if you're deciding which airline you're going to take, it's a really good resource to look at before deciding whether you're going to go with this airline or that airline that you found on Andrew's Skyscanner. The other thing I would do is think about where you're going to sit on an aircraft. I was fortunate enough to be invited by British Airways to do their crew survival course. And that was a really fascinating insight into what really happens in an aircraft emergency. And it's not a polite situation. You get people climbing over one another in order to get to those exits. So you never want to be more than five rows away from an emergency exit on an aircraft. And you also want to make sure that you know how you're going to get to that aircraft if the cabin is filled with smoke. So seat selection, aircraft selection would be the top two bits of advice I'd give on airline safety.
You don't have to worry about this if you're in the UK. But tell us, what's in your go bag?
Oh, goodness. But I would just like to say, just because obviously I do fly for my other job, and also actually I went to Scotland the other weekend for a little mini adventure, and I did fly then. And the main headache I had was not, are we going to crash? You know, what's going to happen about terrorism, any of that stuff. I was more worried about how do I get my ice axe and crampons through onto the plane. Now I have to pay EasyJet an extra extortionate amount to put them in the hold. And I do just want to say that for all the risk and all the thing, flying is still really, really safe. You are still way more likely to crash on the way to the airport than you are in the plane. Do not stop flying and travelling because of these perceived risks, because I think our perception sometimes is way over the top compared to the actual realities of risk.
I absolutely agree with that. That without doubt, the biggest hazard for anybody travelling is road traffic accidents. So if the latest stats from the World Health Organization will tell you that 1.2 million people a year globally are killed in traffic accidents. Between 30 and 50 million people a year are either injured or disabled in road traffic accidents. And the worst thing is that figure is going up. It's not coming down. And if you compare that with aviation, the figures are actually coming down. It's actually getting safer to travel.
It's actually the safest time ever to fly. Yeah. And, you know, the thing about the cars, this is why walking is so good. And also a really great way, just to swing this back round, to have an adventure in the UK is to get, like, the sleeper train. I don't know if anyone here, has anyone here taken the sleeper train? Yeah, a few of you have. And, you know, book at least 12 weeks in advance is the only real pain with it to get the bargain berths. But you can get a bargain berth for £39. And what it means is you can finish...
So going from where to Scotland?
From London up to Scotland, yeah. Various locations within Scotland. And so you can leave on a Friday night. You can finish work, get in good time, because they don't leave till sort of 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, depending which one you get. And then you get on this train, and it just feels, it's such a nostalgic way of travelling. And you get on, you go to the dining car, talk to people, have a drink, and then you retire to your little tiny room, and then you're sleeping off the boring parts. And when you wake up, the Highlands are outside your window. And even if you don't want to do the train, because it can be, if you do it last minute, it can be super expensive. I'm sure you'd agree with this, Andrew. But I also recently discovered something, and I'm not getting commission from any company, but I discovered the night bus from Megabus Gold. Like, who knew? So Megabus have Megabus Gold, and these have lie-flat beds. And I got up to Glasgow and back £5 each way, night bus, and it goes from Victoria at 11 o'clock, so you can literally have the whole day and evening, having a good time, jump on the night bus, they give you a drink and a snack in the evening, you sleep all the way up, you arrive at 7 o'clock in the morning in Glasgow, and they give you, I mean, they're very surly Glaswegian men who serve you, these are not trolley dollies, and they give you an orange juice and a croissant to get off, £5 each way. So that would be my big top tip. And for the go bag, my website, phoebe-smith.com, has the full list.
Okay, but just give us a little bit of an idea of what's in there if people are thinking about going for an adventure.
Okay, so in my go bag, I typically have obviously my tent or a bivy bag. I have a sleeping mat. I don't skimp on sleeping mat. There's certain areas where I say go budget. Sleeping mat and sleeping bag are not those two areas. I want to have a good night's sleep so that I can enjoy the adventure the next day. So they're the two things definitely have. Food. I once met a girl who decided when she was going on her first wild camp, she was going to eat a salad. It's not the time to eat a salad. You know, you can eat anything you want. You're going out there, you're walking, you're carrying a pack. You know, you put whatever you want, whatever your treat is. So chocolate for me, of course. You might want a half bottle of wine or a cheeky bit of whiskey. Whatever it is, take your treat with you. And then, you know, I take a tiny first aid kit, but I'm always, again, very hopeful. It's mainly got blister plasters in it and tick removers, because they are the two biggest risks. Map, compass, a warm jacket to sit round in. And I always take an inflatable pillow, and I get a lot of stick for that, but honestly, it makes complete difference. There are people who will tell you, just roll up your jacket and sleep on that. No, take an inflatable pillow. The Cocoon do a really good one that's inflatable and then got a layer of down. That's my big top tip.
Let me ask you, Andrew, do you have any essential kit when you travel?
Oh dear. Okay, I'm going to tell you something that I'm a little bit embarrassed about. I think like Phoebe was saying before, I never knew how to pack. I just used to throw everything into my suitcase. And many years ago, I went to Cyprus, and I ironed all my clothes and all ready to go. And then, because I can be very disorganized, I forgot to put them in my case. And I didn't even notice that the case was light. So I got to Cyprus with the clothes I had on and about two T-shirts. Suffice to say, I didn't smell great by the end of the week.
So you've never done that again, I'm sure.
I've learned to be very sparing in what you take, especially if you're going on low-cost airlines, because you don't want to be paying the baggage fees, because it makes it pointless. You know, so but you can actually pack everything in a small suitcase on most of the main airlines, most of the main low-cost airlines, and you know, there's a thing called wearable luggage. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It doesn't look great, I have to say. It looks a bit...
Has anybody got any wearable luggage? Have you? Does it work? You happy with it?
It works. You can wear it. Awful. It looks awful. But they can't stop you taking your stuff to it. So if you feel that you're going over your baggage allowance, wear your luggage. The other thing I would say, another tip, keep your toiletries down to the minimum. I like to smell nice, so I always run through the airport lounge and squirt myself with a Dior Homme, because you can't take it with you. You really can't. And this is going to sound really scummy, but wear dark clothes as well, because you can't be going to the laundrette every single day. And if you go with a white wardrobe, you know, and you sit down in a forest, then unfortunately you're going to look pretty awful. So... don't take white clothes.
Right. Although Leveson Wood was here the other day, and he said that his essential piece of kit was a nice, crisp white shirt at the bottom of his rucksack, just in case he, as happened, meets the Dalai Lama. So, but, you know, you may or may not
meet the Dalai Lama. So, you really never know.
You never know who he might be. Right, let's get the microphone out. And if anybody's got any specific questions about the practicalities or places to go or not to go, then stick up your hand. And we'll do our best to answer them. You've got these fantastic people here with their expertise.
I have three children, two of which live in Australia and New Zealand, and I go there regularly once a year because they have very little children. But I'm finding the air costs quite extortionate. So is there an easier way for me to spread the costs?
Yes, there is. It's actually very cheap, and I research flights to Australia. What I would suggest to you is it depends how much time you've got to spend. But if you can, you've got loads of time, then this is perfect. Don't fly direct. Fly via somewhere else. So I found a route. I can't actually recall the cost, but it cut the cost by a fortune. If you fly to Dubai and stop at Dubai, don't do the whole kind of staying in the airport all night and getting the connecting flight, because no one wants to do that. Go and experience Dubai for a couple of nights, and then if you want to, you can stop in Jakarta or Malaysia or Singapore, and using the techniques in my book, you can find cheap connecting flights through each of these countries and back again. You can save an absolute bomb doing that, and if you're up for an adventure and you're prepared to zigzag around the world, you go to places that you may never have dreamt of going to. And I think I want to touch on something that Phoebe said there. You know, if you insist on going to Marbella or to the Hamptons or wherever, it's going to cost you a lot of money. But if you're prepared to just go somewhere that you may never have considered going before, I believe you're going to get a much richer travel experience, because what you will get there is you won't get a lot of other travellers, so you'll actually get to meet the locals there, you know. And you know, I think London's a fantastic city, Paris is a fantastic city, but everyone's been there. When you come back, you want memories. You want to say to people, you want to show off a little bit and say, guess where I went, you know, and it's somewhere crazy and amazing.
Can I just add as well, you might want to consider a round the world ticket and go a complete sort of loop round, because you can get one from a starting price about £600. You can get a starting price one. There's one called the Great Escapade, which is quite well known, which is through Virgin and their sort of partners, and you can add on, you can buy extra miles or take away, but they often come out cheaper than just going there and back, and it means you do a complete loop and you can stop off along the way. And also exactly what you said, if you use a lot of airlines have a hub somewhere else. So like you said, Dubai for like Emirates, or there's Qatar who have Doha. Or there's even like Iceland Air if you want to go to the US and go that way. Yeah, and it's so cheap. And also they actually actively encourage you to stay in the hub city. And you can, so for instance, one, I know this isn't going to New Zealand, but with Iceland Air, they want you to stay in Iceland so much that it's a cheaper flight to go to America and stay and get out for up to a week. You can save about £50 on the ticket because you're saving on taxes because you're not going on straight away. So do look at what the hub airports are.
I think I found a return flight to Los Angeles going via Iceland, as Phoebe said, and coming back, I think, via Fort Lauderdale. And I think it was about £280. You know, so if you're prepared to do that and you have the time. But even if you, maybe you don't have the time that everybody has, you can still, even in the summer holidays, I found a route around staying away from the Mediterranean, but a week in the school holidays. fly into Cologne first, and then to Riga in Latvia, and then back to London. I think it was £62. And that was in the height of the summer season. So you could have an amazing adventure.
So really, it's about embracing, rather than seeing a stopover as a negative thing or what I'm doing, it's about embracing that and getting out there as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, other questions? We'll come to you and then to you afterwards.
Thank you. Question for Lloyd, slightly sobering one. You spoke about not being more than five rows from an exit on an aircraft. What about safety in terminals, airline terminals and rail terminals and so on? All sorts of risks.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the recent events, particularly at Brussels Airport, really highlight some of the dangers that we have when we're in terminus. And you know, this goes down to your own personal safety, and it doesn't just have to be in terminals, because some terminals you get checked before you actually even enter the building. Others, it's after you've gone and while you're going through security. The one thing that I would say to people, and something that Julia and I discussed before this event, is at the moment there is this climate of fear that it's not safe to travel. And everything is about terrorism, and that if you go to a major city, you're going to get caught up in a terror attack. Well, the stats are that you have a much better chance of winning the national lottery than you ever have of getting caught up in a terrorist attack. Your chances of getting caught in a terror attack are about 1 in 20 million. But there are still things that you can actually do in order to make sure you keep yourself safe. The first thing I would say to you is practice what we refer to as situational awareness. If there is something that doesn't look right, it probably isn't. And so if there's that person that doesn't look as though they fit in, or they're looking a little bit shifty, steer clear of them. Alert the authorities as to, you know, that you do think that something is untoward. The other thing that we need to be thinking about is when we're traveling, is making sure that we're aware of not just ourselves, but the other people who are traveling with us as well, to make sure that they're aware of what some of those dangers might be. But I wouldn't just limit it to airport terminals or train terminals or anything else like that. I would say get into the habit of practicing situational awareness whenever you're traveling, whenever you step out of your hotel, whenever you get on public transport or anything. Because in every situation in your own town, whether it's Swindon or whether it's somewhere else, there's what we refer to as a baseline, what we know is actually normal. And anything that is an anomaly to that baseline is something that needs to be reacted to.
There's another question just here. Yeah.
Thank you. I was just an observation, really. The Radio 4 programme this morning, 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock, they had a whole feature about overnight trains in Europe and
yes,
across
Saturday
the world.
Saturday Live. Yeah.
It's very good. Worth listening to on iPlayer.
Great, thank you. We've been getting tips from the audience. That works. Good. Other questions or comments? Yes, there's one just here, Roddy.
Hi. My question's for Phoebe. I feel, as a young woman, there is quite a lot of prejudice and negativity against travelling yourself. Mm. And I was just wondering, did you have any really scary kind of experiences that warranted that kind of mentality? Or is it just really old-fashioned?
So when I went travelling... I'm guessing you mean traveling around the world, sort of traveling, or anywhere. Yeah, I mean, so in the travel sense of it, when I went traveling, yes, there was a lot of that. And back when I went, no one was really, there was email. I mean, I'm not that old, I promise, but there was email, but there was no social media. There was very little way of staying in contact. And people were worried, but I don't know, I've seen a change because people were worried, but they kind of just trusted you to go and make good decisions. And, you know, my dad was kind of like, well, if I've raised you right, you're gonna be just fine. And it's definitely changed now. When someone at work was talking to me about, oh, and my friend's daughter's going off, and I'm really worried because, you know, when I see this thing on the news about someone getting kidnapped, and I'm like, do you know what? It's the low risk thing as well. And it is intuition. I really think whether you're traveling overseas or whether you're going in the UK, it is that thing, like you said, if something feels wrong, I really believe in that. And I think the biggest thing that we have against us, men and women, is being British. And I know that sounds weird, but we are incredibly polite people. And I found this when I was in Cape Town. And I found at first people would say something to me and I'd feel like I had to stop and engage with them. And I soon realised that was not the right thing to do in all instances. If I felt I was in a dangerous situation, it's just being able to ignore someone and just kind of walk on ahead and go with my gut. You know, when I've gone and stayed in a bothy, for instance, and I've gone in and I've thought, I'm not quite happy with the company that's here, so I'm going to make my excuse and I'm going to find a reason to leave. And I think it is that. It is trusting your gut and not being too polite that you don't feel you can just kind of get yourself out of that situation. But genuinely, I do feel that there isn't as much risk as the media plays out that there is for men and for women, for both of us. And I think life is a risk. Everything we do is a risk. Getting up this morning and leaving your house was a risk. There are risks every day, and we have to take them because otherwise we don't actually live. So, you know, take the risks, but mitigate them, know what they are, but don't be afraid to have adventures, because then what is the point of all this anyway?
If I may just add to that, my friend who works for Greek tourism, she sent me this article that was in the Daily Express, basically saying 10 travel places you should never go to this year, they're so dangerous. And some of them were perhaps obvious, like parts of Turkey you might want to stay away from. But one of them was Greece, because there'd been someone who was murdered one day in Greece. Now, you know, I don't know if you've been to Greece, but it's a beautiful country, and you're far safer in Greece, I would suggest, than you are leaving the house in London. But it doesn't matter where you go. There's danger, as Phoebe says, everywhere. Don't stay away from Greece. It's amazing. It's so kind. It's one of the most beautiful travel experiences of your life. It's ridiculous. The media writes this nonsense, and it's really important to not live in fear and to follow your instinct, as Phoebe and Lloyd have both said.
So let's come back to that idea of the British as a polite nation. Cliche, but you know, some cliches are there for a reason. You pick up in your book about being assertive. So if, for example, you get in a vehicle and there aren't seat belts, choose a different vehicle.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we're saying about vehicle accidents. And so often we deal with investigations where people will say things after an event, if only I had done such and such, or I wish I had done such and such. That's when you're getting into that vehicle, if it doesn't have seatbelts, trust me, there is a vehicle in that town somewhere that does have seatbelts. Wait for it. And it is such an important part of your own personal safety. But going back to your question, you know, about vulnerability, a couple of things that if you feel that someone is watching you or surveilling you, the likelihood is they probably are. So then you need to take some evasive action for that. And the other thing is that don't be afraid, going back to what Phoebe was saying, if you think someone is following you, don't be afraid to look at them. Too often we try and shy away from it rather than actually confronting it and actually staring at someone. And our research has shown that if you look at someone that you think is a threat to you, they're less likely to carry through with that threat.
Dogs smell fear.
Can I just say, the first time I went solo wild camping, I did what every single person will do this when you first go solo wild camping, is you finally get into your sleeping bag and you're lying in your tent and it's dark and you think, I'm done it, I'm here, it's great. And then you hear a noise outside your tent and you are convinced it's an axe murderer coming to get you. Like, you've seen too many horror films, and even though you're in the middle of nowhere, you're just convinced it is. And I've been doing it for over 10 years now, and it is always a rabbit or a sheep, okay? It always is. You know, you're in a tent, people don't even know who's inside. So it's completely normal to feel vulnerable, and it's completely normal to feel afraid. But it's facing that and overcoming it and realising that you're much stronger than you thought you were. And then just the more you do it, the more you feel alive doing it. And so I'm happy to talk to you about afterwards about being a solo female traveller as well. But just do it. Everyone can do it, men and women. We can all travel by ourselves. We can all go and wild camp and have adventures. And we should all go and do that and stop being inside. We should go.
We've got time for one more very quick question and a quick answer.
Hello. It's addressed to all of you, really. I was just wondering which websites you'd use for cheap accommodation. For example, Couchsurfing, Airbnb.
Okay, very briefly, one or two each.
I would say Airbnb is very good. The best hotel website is hotelscombined.com. I road tested all of the ones, and it's a meta search engine, so it searches all the search engines.
So, and Hotels Combined.
Hotelscombined.com for hotels. Also, if you want a bit of luxury, lastminute.com do a thing called Secret Hotels. And what it is really nice hotels have lots of spare capacity that they can't sell. But they can't sell it over the counter because they don't want to devalue their product. So they sell it under the counter. So what you can do is, if you're in a major city, you can basically go on their website. They'll say there's a five-star hotel around the corner. They'll tell you which part of town it's in. And you can actually Google it from their description and find out exactly what the hotel is. I know for a fact the Savoy Hotel does it in London, as an example. So you could stay in the Savoy Hotel for prices that you would never get off their official website, that you'd never get anywhere else.
But so, you've got to just take a bit of a chance because you don't know quite where it will be. Yeah.
But you can actually, they print a description of the hotel. If you put that in your Google search and press search, the name of the hotel will come up. So you're not actually taking a chance at all. You'll know exactly where you are.
But don't tell them. Shh.
But don't tell anyone.
Okay. Phoebe.
Secret.
Brief website.
I would say campinmygarden.com, which is people open up their gardens so you can go camp in them. And I would also say, if you've got a bit more time, trustedhousesitters.com is a good one to register on. I went and managed to stay for 3 weeks in a town in California dog sitting. So that's like a sort of a different way to do it. But there are people who it's just they're going away for a weekend and they want you to look after their cat or their home or that sort of thing. So I'd sort of say those two for something a bit different.
Thank you. Lloyd?
What they said.
Oh, I like that sort of an answer when we're a couple of minutes late. Thank you very much. I hope you are feeling wiser. Do carry on the conversation because all three of the guests will be over at the Stanford's stand. Andrew's book is informative and very funny. Phoebe, if you're looking for challenge and adventure and inspiration, get that one. And Lloyd's book is full of really good advice, but there's also lots of quite seat-of-the-pants personal stories in there as well. So go and have a look at the Stanford's bookshop and meet them over there. Thank you very much for coming. Thanks for some great questions. Thanks to the panel.